Hello, everybody. We are back. It is another week of Truth or Skepticism. I'm Tom Sosnoff. He's Dylan Radigan. Dylan, the Fed just came out. I'm not sure exactly what they said. Probably nothing, but S&P's rallied a little bit. It's Wednesday. It is May 1st, Labor Day in some parts of the world. And
it's Labor Day around the world.
But everything, you know, we're ethnocentric here in America, so everything is all about us. You know how that works.
I understand.
It's not Labor Day in Chicago, okay? It's Labor Day everywhere else in the world. S&P just rallied a little bit on whatever the Fed minutes
on the no move.
Bonds are up a full point, which is kind of that is the only thing I got right here. So I will give myself credit for that one thing.
Take it.
Yeah, we'll take it. But
I'm sure Ilya will have 5,000 words for us at 4 p.m. on overtime. So if you really want to know about the Fed,
well, I figured the best play on the market was the bonds, and I actually was right for once. I didn't make any money on it, but I was right.
It's being right is more important.
Being right, oh yeah, much more important. The psychological side is way more valuable.
I've been right all year on oil. Haven't made a penny.
Anyway, I was going back and forth with a couple of customers and people here about different topics for Truth or Skepticism. People get all fired up about this segment, and one person asked me, said, "Tom, can you cover tenure? I want to hear what Dylan Radigan has to say about it." And I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, well, we're not talking 10-year notes. So I don't think we've ever had a discussion on the concept. And there's so much going on right now around college campuses in the US that I think it's actually a pretty interesting topic for this week. The last time I can remember this kind of a student uprising would have to, I mean, don't we have to kind of go
68,
back?
68. It's yeah. Got to be 60.
You know, I mean, yeah, early 70s. You know, I was a product of the early 70s.
Imagine the political, because 68 is the signature year, right? In terms of both college protests and the political conventions that summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the Democratic convention in Chicago in the summer of 68 is the only legendary political convention in modern American history for the protests, violence, you know, hostility, controversy, et cetera. And it seems between the campuses, Biden, Trump, this whole thing, like, I think we got ourselves a little, we're going to have a hot summer.
Well, also the Democratic convention is back in Chicago this year, which is,
oh wow, I didn't know that. Actually.
Oh yeah.
That's
perfect. Yeah. And, okay. Actually right by our office.
Really?
It's at the United Center and we're literally right down the street. You can throw a stone from the United Center where Tasty is. So, so talk about coming full circle. And what year was Kent State? Was that 68?
I'd have to Google. No, it was later. Cause Kent State was the end. Kent State was like the
was it 72?
I believe it that or 71, but we'll find out. Quick. Google will tell us extremely quickly.
1970. It was actually May 4th. It was this week in 1970. So it was 54 years ago.
Now, the video that I saw from NYPD at Columbia, the cops appeared to be extremely well-behaved under extremely difficult circumstances, meaning that the students seemed to be very aggressive and the cops seemed to be very disciplined, which I offer as a compliment to the NYPD at this point.
Yeah. Anyway, the reason I bring up what's going on in college campuses right now is not to have a discussion on that topic because I don't want to go down that rabbit hole for, you know, a financial network. But one of the original reasons behind the whole concept of tenure for professors and teachers was to protect them from any kind of political ideology they may have, political discussions they may have, thoughts that they might talk about, creativity, you know, it was really more of a protection, wasn't it? Originally, that was kind of the whole.
For sure. No, I mean, to this day, sort of in the abstract, tenure is a wonderfully aspirational concept that has, in my opinion, you know, we'll talk about a litany of issues with it, but yeah, tenure existed or exists at its highest and best purpose to protect controversial thought, opinion, research, so that people are not afraid to lose their job if they decide to research if there's aliens, or if they decide to research if there's not a god, or do something that is sort of socially alienating.
Or they cover a topic in a book that's controversial or that's been banned somewhere else.
They write a book that says there's no god and you can't get fired for that. Yeah. Or they write a book that says the aliens are in charge. Yeah.
So I'm not sure that we're going to be on different ends of the spectrum on this, but one of the things that I wanted to cover, because the way I wanted to relate this back to markets, is that I'm trying to, and I haven't even been able to solve for this in my own head, whether tenure actually is in the, and I know there's lots of different debates that have been going on for years in some states, like Florida don't even have tenure, and I think there's four states, Florida, Wisconsin, and two other states, I can't remember which ones they are, that don't even have it. But does it serve its purpose, as we just talked about, to protect, you know, that kind of freedom for teachers, or does it really limit today's curriculum, and does it really restrict? Because basically it could be a disincentive.
Not only that, it calcifies the faculty such that there's no new blood, there's no new thought, there's no new anything. It's like our presidential candidates. It's day of the dead.
Yeah, I mean, think about the way college sports has evolved, and players can now. You know, it used to be if you were at one university, you were limited from going to another university because you would have to sit out a year and you'd lose a year of eligibility. But now anybody can enter into what they call a transfer porthole, a portal, and then they can go to another university and be fully eligible. They don't lose any time, go anywhere they want, and everything's up for grabs.
Which I think is terrible. I think that's terrible, by the way, but that's a different
discussion. Well, okay, but would you feel the same way if professors could enter a transfer porthole, a portal, so that if you were like a really interesting professor and you wanted to switch schools, you could, which you can't really do today.
Of course, yes. But I mean, yes, I would like
and
that.
Higher education be better for that?
Higher education would be better if 80% of the universities were shut down completely.
That is not the question.
And the best professors from the remaining 20% of the universities were more broadly accessible to all of the students. That's what would make it better.
That's ridiculous, though. That's not.
Oh, and your transfer portal is okay? I mean, all these instances of. So can I offer a couple of points of context? Can I just give you a little context?
Sure.
So when I was a host at MSNBC, I was offered this contract to write this book called Greedy Bastards. And so the book Greedy Bastards, we put together this outline. We're like, oh, well, we'll look at all the major industrial sectors of the U.S. economy, with obviously the banking sector being the most important, and then trade, healthcare, energy, and education. And then I set out to basically interview the best people I could find on each topic, new ideas to improve education, improve healthcare, improve energy efficiency, et cetera. And so in doing that, I discovered lots of really smart and interesting people in the educational world, And the question that I was asking was not about education, but it was about learning and how people learn. And I believe whether it's the tenure discussion or the university discussion or the Florida curriculum or anybody's curriculum, the problem with every single one of these discussions is that they all revolve around what is in the interests of the teachers, professors, and administrators. That none of these things are done in the interest of the students learning things. So all of this is done in the interest of power, money, and the adults.
But how's that fair when we just said that the reason tenure exists is to protect the...
Yeah, to protect the professors. What does it do for the student? So
protect the professors so that they can talk about anything that they want to talk about. That's what it does for the students.
But presumption is that letting professors talk about whatever they want to talk about is good for students. But when you look at the research on learning and how the human brain functions and how human beings learn by being in groups and solving problems together.
But that has nothing to do with it. That's not the discussion. The discussion is...
But it does have something to do with it, because the biggest barrier to changing the way that we educate at the university level, whether it's with your transfer porthole... I like when you call it a porthole, by the way, instead of a portal.
I know. I don't know why I say that. I think it's a New Yorker in me, but portal.
It takes on a nautical vibe.
I know. I realize that. I didn't mean to say it.
I find it charming, because the transfer portal kind of sounds like a Star Trek or a Star Wars thing, like intergalactic. But the transfer porthole is like a location on the boat.
I know. I caught myself.
To crawl through the window if they hope you didn't have too big lunch, because you're going to have to squeeze through the porthole if you want to get another job. Anyway, I couldn't help myself. My point is that the whole system, the tenure system, et cetera, the reason we are not getting the learning that we could be getting is because we are not delivering the expertise that exists to the largest number of people. And we are not putting people, the students, in environments where they're the most likely to learn. So the question is tenure an asset to the educational experience or a liability to the educational experience? And my bottom line is, I believe tenure is a liability to the educational experience. I believe it is a well-intended and admirable concept in the scope of Socrates and the Greek scholars of Athens, where any idea should be, there's no idea that should get you thrown out of the Colosseum. The point of the educational Colosseum is that there is no idea that can get you thrown out. But I believe that tenure has been manipulated, maybe not even consciously or explicitly, but implicitly and unconsciously, as a means to preserve power, not as a means to empower thought. And I think that that's very common with every organization, that the reason that you and I are so attracted to a more raw capitalistic environment, or forget when you say capitalistic, but a raw market economy, let's say, with good information, is because it is so ruthless in shifting its loyalties to the next most efficient answer to the problem without the sacred cows or the ability to gatekeep, a la an Apple monopoly for its app store, or whether it's, I forget what we were talking about the other day, but you didn't like it. There was something that you wanted to get rid of the other day. I can't remember, but you had some government intervention you were recommending on something. Oh, it was compensation. It was non-competes. You wanted to get rid of the non-competes.
Yeah, I know.
And I think that the tenure has been bastardized as a mechanism to preserve power and limit new ideas and limit the marketplace of ideas.
Okay, well,
but I believe.
Go ahead, finish up.
No, I think that at its best, tenure, if in a honorable world of brilliant scholars, tenure would be fabulous to empower outrageous and provocative thought in order to cause people to recontextualize themselves in the world. But reality is tenure has been used as a means to reduce the marketplace of ideas and preserve and for people to keep their job. So, but which is not to say that my point is that it's not to say that you should necessarily throw out tenure, but you need to find a way to better accomplish the ideal of an open form of ideas, because tenure is not getting it done.
Okay. I'm going to, in general principle, agree with you, because, because it's very easy to agree. I find it interesting that you were opposed to student athletes being able to jump around, but for some reason you have no issue with that when it comes to professors. But I understand you're looking for an alternative. I, as a free market kind of junkie, that's my issue with it, in that, first of all, I don't think you have to get rid of 80% of your professors or teachers or anything. I think that's
all the, no, I'm done with the whole university. Shut them all.
I think that that's just, you're just trying to, you know, scare the children. But what I do think is that it is very difficult for universities. I hate to keep going back to sports, but I think I have to. In the sports world, it is possible through draft picks and through trades and through free agency that you can build a team. In the world of academia, it is virtually impossible, because of the nature of academia, that you can restructure a university based on their reputation and rankings and things like that. So we have this archaic system where, you know, if you were to get tenure at one of the really good schools in this country, you will never leave, because that is as prestigious as it can get. That is the award that you get for being whoever it is that you are, that you got offered that position. And therefore the rankings never change, the ratings, the rankings, the nothing ever changes. In the system that I would love to see to make higher education actually work at a completely different level, to make us the global leader in this,
to maximize our potential is
to allow schools to go out, and rather than pay $10 million a year for a head football coach, you know, which is what they can do now because they make money from, you know, football players and things like that. But rather than have all the emphasis on sports, to bring some of the emphasis on academics, to bring in, for example, a Nobel Prize winner, an ex chairman of the Fed.
Why not let that person work off of, why not scale that professor? My point is, scale that professor. Don't just get from one university to the other. That Nobel professor, make them available to as many students as possible.
Well, I understand what you're saying, because you want to do that all virtually and everything else. But I'm talking about kind of more of an in-person thing. We're not going the whole virtual digital route yet.
All right.
But on a certain level, there's no reason why the University of Nebraska, okay, can't compete with Princeton. This is what I'm saying. And there's no reason.
Can't bid for some Princeton Nobels and bring them over.
That's right. And there's no reason
but the tenured Princeton professor will never go to Nebraska.
Well, they won't now, because there is no reason to do that. But a football coach will go from Princeton to Nebraska.
No problem. They would prefer it.
Okay, you understand my point. So if a football coach will go from Princeton to Nebraska, then a Nobel Prize winner should go from Princeton to Nebraska too, under the right set of circumstances. Okay, and that's what we need to create.
I agree with you. But again, now we're but you're dismissing my fantasy educational system in favor of your fantasy educational system. But both of us are circumventing the actual educational system, which is a system based on the sale of prestige. So the big mistake is the universities do not sell education. The universities sell social prestige, social status, and social access. The reason Princeton is better than Nebraska is not because the education the math class is better, although it may be, at Princeton. It's because the access and the social status and the nature of the internships and the students and the cultural capital and the fathers and mothers of the other students and who's a bank CEO and who's a whatever, whatever, that it is a social differentiation. It is not an educational differentiation.
No, that's not. That's only partially true. It is an educational thing. There are certain, if you have Nobel Prize winners that are teaching.
I agree. I'm not disagreeing with, but I'm saying that's not the reason people make the choice.
No, of course not. Of course not. There's a lot of reasons, but all I'm saying is there's a couple things you have to do if you want to address tenure. And one of the things you have to do is put protections in place so that professors and teachers, so that they, first of all, to protect their freedom of thought and their freedom to be imaginative and creative and to talk about things that may be controversial.
Or unpopular or controversial.
Or that may be unpopular, or that may be controversial, or that may piss a few people off, or a certain, group, religion,
even
whatever.
Even a lot of people.
Yeah, that's fine. And you have to protect them. And that is, at a very minimum, that's what you have to do. But on top of that, as long as we can put those protections in place, which was kind of the foundation of tenure to start with, once those protections are in place, then we can create a system where a professor will not mind being at some university for 3 years and then some other place for the next 5 years. And let teachers have an opportunity to, let's create an environment where teachers and professors based on what they are teaching and what people get out of those classes generate revenue for those universities that in turn generate a certain student that becomes much more valuable in the workplace. I mean, right now you can almost tell what you're going to get.
If you want to create a valuable student, you would have to have them learn things.
That's right.
And in order for someone to learn things, they need to be in a group-based problem-solving environment.
In order for people to learn things, you have to create an environment that encourages the smartest people and the best people to be those teachers. One of the reasons that not
everybody...
And you
need those best and smart teachers to be accessible to the largest number of students.
That's a different discussion, but I agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with you, but that's a different discussion. There's a certain amount of value of the in-person class compared to everything online. Online, to me, is not the total solution. It's a complementary solution. And I know it from what we do here at Tasty. Our in-person events are far more valuable than our online events. It's just something special about it. And I don't think anybody should have to go through higher education or any kind of education and not get to experience that. So I think that's a really important part. But I think we can make it so much better by creating kind of a free market. And one of the ways you get into a free market is essentially you change what has always been kind of the legacy tenure platform.
And so let's set aside all the words and let us reduce this to that which we agree. Having protections for teachers to have controversial thoughts and ideas is a good thing. Tenure was intended to do that, but has failed. And it has been converted actually into a limitation of ideas and a limitation of opportunity. Do you agree or you do not agree?
I agree.
And so the solution is, so let's say that, as you know, with any star system, 1% of the participants, whether it's 1% of the college football players, 1% of the college basketball players, 1% of the traders, whatever it is, the 1% of the movie stars get 99% of the money. It's not an incrementally smooth curve. And so the issue would be 1% of the professors would be the ones that would be going through the transfer porthole from Nebraska to Princeton. And none, the rest of the professors wouldn't change. I think that the biggest is the reason people, like, I'm sure the reason that the people who watch Tasty said, what would you talk about tenure, is the fundamental concern is that tenure has created a very limited scope of thought in the on university campuses, not an expanded one, and that it has made it very difficult to change who's in charge of teaching at these universities. And so I think that the question, when somebody asks me about what my opinion of tenure is, the way I interpret that question is, do I believe that universities are fulfilling their aspiration to be a place of free and open thought and discussion? And do I think that professors are helping to expand free, open thought and discussion? And I don't. I think that universities are limiting thought and discussion and limiting the opportunity. I mean, I had as you know, I'm on the board of this biotechnology company, which is at a university, which is part of a university, which I shall not name. And there was a mandate for a position for a minority research assistant with a budget. And so the company that I work for identified a very well-qualified Asian American male from India who was a minority. And we were told that we could not hire him because he was not the correct minority. Because it was he wasn't minority enough. So then we had to file an appeal because it was a dispute between the state rules on what a minority is and what the federal government rules on what a minority is. And ultimately we won the appeal because while there may be degrees of minority in somebody's head, at the federal government level, a minority has a legal definition. It's not a subjective definition. But I interpreted that as an example of a university using its incumbent tenured power to restrict the scope of opportunity to that which they approved of, which I think is the primary issue that many people in this country have regarding the universities in general. The question that matters from a market perspective is, are we creating crops of 22-year-olds, plus or minus about 4 years either way, that are increasingly interested, capable, and engaged in participating in the economy as it is structured right now? And I'm not sure that we are. And I think so. The big question is, how do you help the universities create a more robust set of graduates every year, as opposed to an increasingly or a less robust pool of graduates every year? And is tenure do you believe that we're creating better or worse graduates every year at this point, in your opinion?
I believe with the speed at which technology continues to be rolled out, we are creating better and better graduates every year.
And do you believe that's a function of the educational system itself, or that's the function of technology bypassing or augmenting the educational system and the actual nature of
There's no such thing as bypassing education. Everything is a derivative of the educational system. So there is nothing. We have nothing without our educational system. So no, I'm not buying that argument at all. Everything is a byproduct or a derivative of our educational system. Our educational system keeps getting better, and one of the reasons that the economy grows at the pace that it does, one of the reasons that that valuations grow at the way that they have over the last couple of decades is because education keeps getting better and better. In spite of what everybody says and thinks and blah, 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 that's not what's actually happening. What's actually happening is, education works. College works. the maturation process through the whole thing, it works. I understand the debt issues. I understand the tenure issues. I understand all that. But in spite of all that stuff, the system works. And the kids that are coming out of school today are,
and you know, why is the participation rate falling off so rapidly?
What participation rate?
Enrollment in university, especially from young men.
It's expensive.
And maybe it would be less expensive without tenure, without paying a bunch of professors that you can't fire to not work.
I don't disagree with you, which is why I made this argument in the first place. That's why I said make it into a free market and make the market depending on kind of what's being taught. There's all this interest. You know, it's like I said, it should just be like sports where it's free. You know, it's essentially it's a true free market. But I'm not going to indict the whole, you know, educational system. I think that's ridiculous. One of the reasons we are where we are today is because of how good and how we prepare people, whether it's through networking, internships, the classes that are taught today, today's technology, all the money that's spent on infrastructure in education. I mean, let's not discount. Don't buy into all the negative, you know, all the dummies and negative, crazy press that's, you know, that's trying to paint a different picture. That's not what it's like. As somebody that hires a lot of young kids, they're better today than they were 10 years ago. They're better 10 years ago than they were 10 years before that. Period. They're smarter. And
what's better about them?
I think that the access to information has made people, they know more. Everybody knows more. There's very little one-dimensional.
I don't disagree with that. I'm sure they know more.
Everybody used to be very one-dimensional, myself included. We were very one-dimensional. We didn't have access to that much information. And today we have access.
I don't disagree with that at all, but you think the reason they know more is because of the educational system?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the reasons I'm such a proponent of it is because that there's a maturation process where your brain starts to, you know, there's a certain part of your life where, you know,
I agree with that.
Where you're just screwing around and then you end up going to college and you're kind of learning how to de-screw around and then also learn something.
So the primary value of university is a socialization process, an education process.
It is a big part of it. It's a network.
It's also, like you said, how to be a young man or a young woman as opposed to a teenage, overgrown child.
Yeah. Yeah. And it teaches you, it's essentially the world's greatest network. And that's where we start to learn. You know, that's where we make our connections. That's where we, you know, start to branch. It's where you kind of grow up. And that's what's so important about it. That's why it kills me when people go, well, it's not worth it. I'm like, what's not worth it? You know, don't say it's not worth it because that's ridiculous. You can't afford not to do it.
Setting aside your fantasy transfer portal, setting aside my fantasy global digital all-stars university with meetups and keeping the current university structure as it stands today, would you, if you had the authority to either, as Julius Caesar, to either keep tenure or end tenure, what would you do and why?
You cannot end tenure without ensuring that the protections that tenure affords professors and teachers is kept in place. You have to have that. You know, you cannot all of a sudden.
So can I speak to that briefly?
Yeah.
So much like with the non-compete, which you made very clear, and I agree with you ultimately, is not necessary to protect trade secrets, for instance. So I can't take all of my trade secrets from my time at Tasty and go sell them to Robinhood, even if I don't have a non-compete or Interactive Brokers or whoever, because there's other legal means to enforce protection on a company's trade secrets. Could you not suspend or end tenure, but have a employment contract that states that an individual cannot be terminated for anything that they've said or written?
I mean, if we had that in place, I would be okay with, you know, changing the game.
Basically, you'd use the trade secrets protection as opposed to the non-compete, so that you eliminate the calcified, because the non-compete is another version of a calcified system, right? Where it's used for purposes of power and control, not for purposes of creativity and efficiency.
That's right.
Tenure is used now for power and control, but it hides behind the excuse of being a necessary protection for freedom of thought and speech.
I would love to see the world of professors be really open to a true free market. And I would love to see people go from one university to another, like they can in business, like they can in real estate. I would love to have the transfer portal be available to businesses, for CEOs, for anybody that in management, because that would create this absolutely, it would be just so interesting to me in the world of business. It would change everything. Like, it literally would change everything almost overnight.
But once a year, the transfer portal opens and you can look at all the managers at all the other brokers, see which ones you like.
I mean, you can basically find out your value instantaneously. Like, people don't know what they're worth. And that would just be so freaking fascinating.
Do you think there's this is a sort of, I guess this is a bit of a philosophical question. I don't know if it's worth asking, but again, it's easy to quantify the value of a hard science professor that's, a computer science professor at MIT that's teaching computer science to MIT graduates that are going to work at Google is a very linear sort of type of professor to evaluate. A philosophy professor who may be utterly brilliant at the University of Nebraska as a teacher, but who's specializing in enrolling young minds in the very idea that there are people, whether it was Kant or John Locke or Nietzsche or all these philosophers, and the sort of the way that they even reflected upon the very meaning of existence and all the jibber jabber, which may be extraordinarily valuable to a person's life and making decisions and making peace with various outcomes in their life and helping other people and all these things, but it's much less concrete. I guess my point is, not everything has a dollar value, but just because something lacks a dollar, the problem with a market worldview is it reduces everything to the dollars associated with the value of the item. And there are things in society, particularly in education, but also in places like healthcare, where there are things that have substantial value, even if they don't have an apparent economic value.
That's fair.
And tenure, I think, and this is just, tenure is intended to also protect that aspect. Where that, like, as if I teach you crypto trading in the middle of a crypto boom, I can very explicitly be like, "Was that I teach you these things, you're going to make more money. So pay me more money because I'm teaching you something that helps you make money." Anyway, I just think that that's a different discussion. That's a different truth or skepticism for a different day. But the primary issue with market reductionism for the solving of all problems is it assigns a value of zero to things that are extraordinarily valuable, particularly things that exist in the healthcare and the educational system. And I think that the risk of reducing to education to a marketplace, unlike the CEO world or unlike the entertainment world or unlike the trading world or the athletic world, is the educational world occupies a space that's more akin to the healthcare world, where it has a value proposition that's not really captured by dollars in a linear sense.
Really fascinating. So thanks so much for spending your Wednesday afternoon with us for the last 40 minutes or so. And we'll be back with Truth or Skepticism next Wednesday at 1 p.m. See you soon. Thanks so much.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.